A bright white light shines out from the center of a black screen. The screen lightens to reveal clouds in a blue sky. The light is held aloft by a statuesque woman wearing a long white robe with a blue sash draped around her. She stands on a raised plinth before the cloudy sky. Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment company. Wispy clouds surge forwards. A blue and silver passenger jet cruises above white fluffy clouds. A waxy-skinned, long-haired guy sitting alone in first class glances behind him. An oriental man's chatting to a blonde woman.
Thank you.
In the galley, a balding steward chats to a stewardess.
Look, lady, it's not the seats that have gotten smaller. It's your ass that's gotten bigger.
In economy class, a man closes an overhead locker. Virtually all the seats are full. A suited man takes his seat. A blonde steward notices a teenage couple sneaking into a toilet. The red engaged sign on the toilet door opposite disappears. The door opens, and a broad African man wearing a robe decorated with a colorful repeat pattern and a flat-topped hat emerges. He presses his fingers against the skin on the back of his neck and wanders through the cabin, casually tossing a small pouch in the air. As he enters the galley, the balding steward holds up his hands.
I'm sorry, sir. This cabin is restricted to first class.
Are you looking for this?
He holds up a ticket.
Is there anything I can get you?
Scotch. Blended. Straight.
He points aggressively and walks on.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Got a report of some turbulence up ahead. I'd like to ask you to please move up your seats and fasten your seatbelts if you would. And please remain there until we release the fasten seatbelt sign.
The African man sits next to the long-haired guy who shifts awkwardly in his seat, then looks at him.
I hear birds can't fly this high.
I hear only angels can.
He tips some diamonds out of his pouch into his hand. The guy reaches for them, and he yanks his hand away.
Where's the bomb?
The guy unzips his jacket.
I am the bomb.
A bomb's strapped to his chest. The steward walks up.
Shall I pour your scotch?
No, I'll take the bottle. Thank you.
He takes it, and the steward walks off. A film starts to play on a small screen. T.J. Hooker, the movie.
Another movie from an old TV show.
The African man looks at his watch.
Walk out.
No,
it isn't.
He grabs the guy.
What are you doing? Get off of me!
The African man drags the guy to the emergency exit, opens the door, and leaps out with him. The pair spin backwards, then plummet towards an ocean. They fall past a helicopter. A skydiver in black leaps out and falls head first after the tumbling pair. The LED clock on the bomb on the guy's chest reads 12 seconds remaining. The skydiver zooms down and unhooks the bomb. It flies off and explodes. The long-haired guy, the skydiver, and the African man fall towards the azure water. The African man pulls a ripcord and a parachute opens up behind him. The skydiver catches up with the long-haired guy, grabs hold of him, and releases a parachute. A gold-topped speedboat cuts through the water below them. It's piloted by a beautiful young woman wearing a gold bikini. The skydiver gracefully descends and plonks the terrified guy in a heap at the back of the boat.
Nice flight.
The young woman, Natalie, grins toothily. The skydiver takes off her helmet, revealing her to be an exquisitely featured young Oriental woman, Alex. She shakes her long black hair out and smiles wickedly. The bulky African man gently lands in the back of the boat and releases his parachute. The long-haired guy points at him manically.
I think you mean crazy bitch.
She pulls off a mask, revealing herself to be a luscious-lipped young redhead, Dylan.
What is this? What's going on here?
Damn, I hate to fly.
No way! No way! What's with that? Who are you people?
Dylan stands between Natalie and Alex at the front of the boat. The women are silhouetted.
Once upon a time, there were three very different little girls.
During a driving lesson, a young, fresh-faced Natalie makes the car drive along on two wheels. A silhouette appears with a caption. Natalie.
The best things in life are free.
Meanwhile, Alex, on horseback, jumps a fence and wins an event. She smiles for the camera. Scruffy Dylan, with ratty blonde hair, is in a toilet smoking, her left arm's in a graffitied plaster cast. She gives the security camera the finger.
Who grew up to be three very different women.
And making her a five-day champion. Way to go, Natalie.
But they have three things in common. They're brilliant, they're beautiful.
A drill sergeant screams at Dylan. She crosses her eyes, then punches him out.
And they work for me. My name is Charlie.
Shots of the girls in action. Natalie skateboards. The girls are in a rock band. Alex fences. In a forest, Natalie is chained between Alex and Dylan. The three pull each other this way and that.
No, no, no! This way! Wait, you guys, I'm not a yo-yo!
The girls do flying kung fu kicks. They become silhouettes. Three-dimensional letters hurtle across a flaming background. Charlie's Angels. Inside a leaky tugboat, Dylan's lying under disheveled covers. She wakes, frowning to the sound of geeky Chad, who walks in holding a frying pan.
Just call me Angel of the Morning, baby. Just touch my cheek before you leave. Oh, yeah. Good morning, Starfish.
Dylan sits up and smiles.
Morning. Chad. Sweet Chad.
I figured we could have a little breakfast, and then maybe, after, we could have a little Chad.
Hold that thought.
She grabs a red cell phone, then looks serious.
Hello? Yes, I'll be right in.
She hangs up and pulls a disappointed face.
Isn't that just the luck?
Outside.
Hey, I can make something else if you don't want eggs.
Nope. It's not the eggs.
Is it the boat?
It's not the boat. I have to go, though.
Is it the Chad?
She grins back at him.
It might be the Chad.
Dylan speeds off in a convertible Ford Mustang. Chad drops his pan into the water.
It's the Chad. It's the Chad.
Chad falls in. Natalie's in a glitzy club.
Eduardo. Move me.
A Latino DJ spins round in his booth. Natalie, wearing a slinky pale blue dress, dances down a flight of stairs with four suited men. They take turns in dancing with her, then two of them lift her up in the air and fly her down onto a multicolored checkered dance floor. Natalie and the four men dance around in formation, pointing up then down. They hand jive, turn around one way and clap, then another. Natalie dances around one of the men. Another lifts her into the air. White, glittery squares drop down past Natalie's beaming face. Lying in bed, wearing t-shirt and knickers, Natalie wakes from a dream, smiling. Natalie leaps out of bed and ties up her long golden hair. She dances as she straightens her duvet, then wiggles her bum at a floor-to-ceiling mirror. She turns around and dances in fluffy slippers. Natalie swings her arms around, then dances backwards to her front door. A delivery man's waiting outside. Natalie pulls up a blind and opens the door.
Good morning. You know, I signed that release waiver, so you can just feel free to stick things in my slot.
Slightly bemused, he hands her a large flat box.
Thanks.
No problem.
She bumps into the door. On the phone.
Hello? Hey, I'll be right in.
On a trailer, Alex is face to face with a man.
I want to get one thing straight between us.
Go ahead. We're way past keeping secrets at this point.
This is going to be long, hard, and rough.
Sometimes when it's rough, I just get there faster.
If you don't defuse this bomb, Logan, L.A. is going to be a new underwater attraction.
Which wire? The red one or the blue one?
Bum, bum,
That is not helping.
They're reading scripts.
But this is stupid anyway. I mean, why wouldn't I just yank the wire?
No, honey, those are dummy wires. The real mechanism is inside, encased in a titanium shell. If you trip the external feedback circuit, the bomb will detonate.
Wow. You know, for a bikini waxer, you know an awful lot about bombs.
He kisses her shoulder. She wraps her arms around his neck.
Isn't it amazing how much information you can learn off of the internet?
They both grab cell phones.
Hello?
Yeah. Okay. I'll be right there.
Alex walks out and gets into a Mercedes convertible.
When do I get to meet this Charlie?
Charlie's not a very social person.
Charlie's a chick, though, right?
I mean, definitely a woman, right?
He spits out a mouthful of muffin. Later, in a plush office.
I can keep up this facade with Jason anymore.
You don't want to be with a man who's intimidated by a strong woman anyway.
You know, they come on all lovey-dovey until they find out I can shatter a cinder block with my forehead.
I love that trick.
Blueberry muffins? I made them from scratch.
Alex grins proudly. The other two look dubious.
Yum! Sounds good. These look great, Alex.
Oh my god.
Dylan throws one at Natalie and it hits her chest. Natalie flings one back. And it lodges in a door. Bosley comes in. He's a dark-haired man with a soulful face.
What do you call this?
Chinese fighting muffin.
Nothing to laugh about. A buddy of mine took a fighting muffin in the chest. They sent him home in 4 Ziploc bags.
They're not Chinese, they're not fighting. They're blueberry.
She plonks onto the couch next to Natalie.
Alex, you okay?
She's having trouble with her secret identity, Paz.
Aren't we all?
Bosley and Dylan sit next to Alex and Natalie.
Alex, all my angels. The heart is a muscle. In bodybuilding, we exercise the muscle, and it grows bigger and stronger. It's the same with the heart.
I must have the heart of a rhino.
You do, and you'd be proud of it.
Dylan rests her chin on his shoulder.
Mes anges. These little hurts will heal. And at crunch time, your hearts will be so buff, you will be able to clean and jerk his love. 3 sets, 10 reps each.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
It's 9 a.m.
Excuse me, I have to take a phone call.
Bosley goes to a telephone and presses a button. Charlie talks over a speaker.
Good morning, angels.
Good morning, Charlie.
Dylan, Alex, Natalie. I hope you're rested and ready for your next assignment.
On a TV screen.
Meet Eric Knox, a brilliant engineer and the founder of Knox Technologies, an up-and-coming communication software company. Last night, Knox was kidnapped, and his voice identification software was stolen.
He's driven away from a garage. A woman's left on the ground.
Who's the lady left behind?
Vivian Wood. She's the president of Knox Technologies.
Oh, she did it.
Vivian enters.
I guess we can all go home then.
Angels, meet Vivian Wood, our new client.
Hi.
She's hired us to help find Eric Knox.
Hello.
Hi.
Miss Wood, who would have the most to gain from Knox's disappearance?
Me, probably. I'm his partner. Before we were partners, we were friends.
She sits down.
Does Knox have any enemies to speak of?
Roger Corwin. He's the owner of Red Star Systems, the largest communications satellite firm in the world.
6 months ago, he tried to buy out Knox Technologies, and when Knox refused to sell, Corwin just lost it.
Charming.
Was there a ransom demand?
Nothing. But I know he's still alive.
I'll study the garage footage. Maybe there's something there.
So Corwin is our only and best lead, and hopefully he'll take us to Knox.
Corwin gets his weekly massage at Madame Wong's House of Blossoms. That's our chance to feel him out.
He's on the phone.
Said what? Over my dead body. I can accept those terms.
He's lying on his front.
It's getting a little chilly in here, Yoko. I could use some warming up.
The masseur is Alex. She oils her hands.
At your service.
Good. Can we get started this millennium?
She kicks off her shoes and runs at him. Holding onto a ceiling pole, Alex stands on Corwin's shoulders. He looks woozy.
Oh, yeah.
Who holding a lot of tension in your fourth and fifth vertebra. Let me see if I can work that.
She wiggles her feet. She rubs his face with her foot.
Just by activating the right energy points, you can increase circulation, alleviate pain, or even render a man unconscious.
Alex jumps down and takes a key on a bracelet from Corwin's wrist. Natalie and Dylan walk in wearing black wigs and kimonos. In the locker room, they stand behind a screen and wait till a couple of guys with towels around their waists walk out. Natalie opens a locker and takes out a handheld computer. She gives it to Alex.
Palm Pilot.
As Alex scans data from the Palm Pilot, Natalie presses a car key into a silver box full of wax.
Got the car key.
Alex downloads data.
I got a schedule.
Later, Alex is back with bearded, bug-eyed Corwin, who wakes up frowning. Leaning on the bench that Corwin is lying on, Alex rubs his back.
You must have dozed off.
You're very good with your hands. I could use someone like you on my staff.
Thanks for the offer, but my hands aren't going anywhere near your staff.
Later, the angels roll up at a fast food joint.
If Corwin's behind Knox's disappearance, he's got someone else doing his dirty work, guaranteed.
They stop at a speaker. Alex leans across to the speaker while Natalie works on a laptop computer.
Nat, how's it coming with the kidnapping footage?
I'm just enhancing a reflection from the car window.
Alex fixes the speaker with a penknife and some chewing gum.
May I take your order, please?
Yeah, I'd like 3 cheeseburgers, 3 french fries, and 3 cherry pies. What do you guys want?
Natalie grins and holds up a photo of a thin-featured man.
I found a clean frame on one of the kidnappers.
Creepy thin man.
Oh, good. Now we have a bad guy. All we have to do is look for him. Find out if he works for Corwin.
What's Corwin doing tonight?
Who's up for crashing a party?
Dylan plays air guitar and they all crack up. They drive off. That night, spotlights shine up against the side of a skyscraper. Bosley and the angels are sitting in a sedan parked across the street. Natalie opens a case with a display screen set into it. She hands out small tooth-sized objects, and the girls press them onto their back teeth.
Thanks, Nat.
No problem. Bosley's confused.
It's a mic transmitter, Boz. You just stick it on your back molar like a cap.
I know. It's a mouth mic. Sure.
We'll be able to stay in touch the whole time.
Suavely dressed Bosley, wearing shades, strolls into the penthouse courtyard with Dylan in a black dress and Alex in a red dress.
Okay. We're in deep cover now, so if you can't remember John David, just tell me JD. All right, think of
Jelly Donut.
Jack Daniels.
Juvenile delinquent.
Among the guests is a fire breather. Dylan spots Corwin, who, wearing a tuxedo, has a girl on each arm.
There's your date, JD.
Alex and Dylan walk off.
Excuse me, lady.
Corwin approaches Bosley, smiling.
Roger Corwin, welcome.
John David Rage, self-help guru.
John David Rage.
Relax, Boz. Order a drink.
Excuse me, miss?
Yes.
Hi. Miss?
How about a hammerhead, please?
Natalie's a waitress.
Any creepy thin men? Lots of creepy men thin.
I was wondering if...
No.
So you're saying no. There's no chance...
No.
Defeated, the guy walks away from Alex. Natalie goes up to the bartender.
Konnichiwa.
Nihongo shabunu no sugoi ne.
It's incredible.
What is?
Your smile.
She looks coy.
Thanks.
Bosley leans towards Corwin.
This place... It's Japanese, is it not?
It's a 13th century Shinto temple.
I had it...
Bosley's mouth open.
I had it FedEx from Kyoto.
Blowfish?
Isn't that poisonous?
It's a rare delicacy. For the man who has no fear of an excruciating death.
Dylan talks over her transmitter.
Technically, 1 in 60 is fatal.
Bosley stuffs the fish into his mouth and munches it, leaning his head from side to side. He half collapses.
Tastes like chicken. That would go very nicely with broccoli.
The man laughs at death.
Good work, Boz. Let's see if you can get him to talk about Knox.
At last, a worthy adversary. But let's see if you can survive a test of intuition and judgment.
Dylan talks to Natalie over her transmitter.
Nat, what are you doing? That bartender is cute.
I'm working.
He likes you. Go back and flirt a little.
Alex and Dylan watch Natalie walk up to the friendly dark-haired bartender, grinning.
That was fast.
They don't call me Balls Out Natalie for nothing.
Right. I hadn't seen you one of these before, you knew?
Brand new. Like a virgin, you know? I mean, it's my first time. Here, at Corwin's.
Oh, boy. She's going down.
No way, he's into her. Just pick up the tray and walk away.
No. Stay and talk to him. Flip your hair.
What?
Flip your goddamn hair.
Natalie flips her shiny blonde hair and smiles broadly at the bartender. Transfixed, he stares at her. She walks into the crowd. The bartender frowns, perplexed, downs a small cup of sake, and walks over to Natalie.
Say, excuse me, I'm sorry, and I don't usually do this, but I was wondering, of course, that is, unless you're already seeing somebody else, if maybe you know that...
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you are, sorry.
No, I'm not seeing anyone.
Natalie grins.
Free.
Okay, Thursday?
My favorite day.
Great. I'm gonna get tickets.
I love tickets.
What do you know? The guy who speaks Natalie. Where's JD?
Three drummers beat enormous drums with sticks. Bosley and Corwin, wearing sumo suits that double their size, charge at each other in a small ring. On their heads are padded black helmets in the shape of wigs. Corwin barges Bosley over onto his back, then dives on top of him. He pummels his chest. Bosley rolls around on his back.
Somebody help me up, please.
Hello, girl. Are you hearing me?
Alex sees the thin man from the photograph. His black hair neatly slicked back in a center parting, he stands alone, smoking.
Thin man, 10 o'clock.
Natalie and Dylan receive the message on their transmitters. The angels make their way through the guests. The thin man, who has dark, pencil-thin eyebrows, stares into the crowd, then coolly turns and walks to a doorway. Puffing on his cigarette, the thin man waits for a moment, then heads to a door. The angels follow. He presses a button, and the door slides open. He goes along a corridor and takes a cane from an umbrella stand. A door slides open in front of him, and he steps into an elevator. The door closes as Alex runs up.
Why do they always run?
Alex kicks open another door and leads the angels down a stairwell. Alex and Dylan change into tight black trouser suits. The thin man exits through a back door and runs across a street. Clutching his cane, he sprints down a dingy alley. A group of bikers trundles past. The angels chase the thin man, who runs round a corner. Running towards a tall set of gates, the thin man leaps across a crate. As he flies through the air, he turns back and fires a pistol at the angels. The angels leap out of the way of the bullets and take cover. The thin man backs towards the gates. The angels run at the thin man. He tosses away his gun and cartwheels through the gap between the gates. Dylan clasps their hands together. Natalie jumps onto them and vaults over the gates. She grabs a hanging sheet and swings at the thin man. Alex and Dylan climb over the fence. Natalie drops down and the threesome assume martial arts poses. The thin man draws a sword out of his cane and lunges at the angels. Natalie kicks him up in the air. Alex and Dylan kick him against the gates. The angels resume kung fu poses. Livid, the thin man swipes his sword to and fro at the angels. He kicks Natalie against a fence, which collapses. As the thin man's about to run Natalie through, Alex fells him with a broom handle. The thin man turns and fights Alex. He kicks her against the gate and prepares to impale her. Dylan jumps on the thin man's back. He spins her around and bashes her against a wall. He throws Dylan to the ground, ripping out some of her hair as he does so. He sniffs it. Natalie gets up. The thin man flings his sword at her. She ducks. Natalie crouches near the thin man. Dylan rolls across her back and boots him in the face. Alex does a flying kick. Dylan spins Alex round and bashes the man in the face. In slow motion, Natalie flies at the thin man, legs flailing. She boots him in the chest. Seeing the man gets up and runs off down a tunnel. The girls pursue him. The angels charge through a doorway, run along a narrow passage, and end up in a dingy octagonal room with several doors.
Check them all!
Moving around edgily, the girls approach the doors and kick them open, revealing rooms full of junk. They regroup and turn towards an unopened door which has a skylight above it. They charge. Dylan crashes through the skylight and lands in a few inches of water. She takes a bar off the inside of the door. The other two come in. In the middle of the room, a gagged man is gaffer-taped to a chair. Rats scuttle around at his feet. Dylan takes a scarf from around the terrified man's eyes.
Knox.
At the office, Charlie's on the speakerphone.
Great work, Angels, but our job's only half finished. There's still the matter of Mr. Knox's stolen technology.
So what's so special about your software?
Oh, it's really quite amazing. We developed a program. You see, everyone's voice is unique. It has a unique signature, like a snowflake, and it can be mapped similar to the way that a fingerprint...
It's audio DNA. It makes it impossible to disguise or scramble a voice signal.
Which is exactly why Corwin wants it.
Of course. All of Red Star's telecommunication satellites have global positioning systems. You combine that with voice identification...
Red Star could turn any cell phone into a homing device.
No one could hide. You can imagine if this got into the wrong hands, how dangerous it could be. It would be the end of privacy.
That's where you come in, Angels. Corwin is premiering his Red Star racer at the California Speedway.
That's our chance for a little recon. We should plant a hidden camera on Corwin.
Looks like it's off to the races, Angel.
When Roger Corwin first got involved in the world of racing, a lot of people said it was a stopgap for my waning libido. I had more fire.
Corwin sips a drink.
What's so funny? I did.
The black and red Red Star racer sits on the tarmac in front of them. Bosley and the Angels, wearing blue jumpsuits, are undercover with a team of technicians working on a race car with the stars and stripes painted across it.
I'm going in.
But what can I say? It's a Red Star day for me.
Corwin notices Natalie.
Then I guess it's back to the day-to-day grind of world domination and enslavement.
Alex and Dylan scuttle off. Natalie, wearing a dark brown wig, hangs around by the Stars and Stripes car. Corwin walks over, grinning.
Hi.
A chauffeur sits in a black Bentley convertible with the number plate CORWIN. Alex and Dylan run over.
Work your magic.
Dylan, whose blue jumpsuit is unzipped at the front, revealing her cleavage, gets in the Bentley.
It's, hot out there. It's hot in here, too.
She eyes him seductively.
Maybe I can make you a little more comfortable just a second.
He switches on a blower, which wafts a gust of cold air across Dylan's chest and face. She throws her head back enraptured. Alex crouches down at the back of the car.
Oh, come undone. Feels good. Thank you.
Natalie chats to Corwin. Alex unlocks the Bentley's boot and thumps it to open it. Bosley's trying the Red Star racer for size.
It's nice. I like what you've done with it.
Bosley gets out of the racer.
Ours got bigger mirrors.
Alex fits a camera onto the handle of Corwin's briefcase. In the front of the Bentley...
I love cars.
Do you like fast cars?
Alex shuts the boot. Dylan stops the chauffeur looking back.
I like fast everything.
Dylan licks the steering wheel.
Oh my God.
Dylan glances back at Alex, who walks off.
Thanks for the ride.
Dylan gets out of the Bentley. The chauffeur buffs his steering wheel with his jacket sleeve. Natalie leaves Corwin. Dylan joins Alex.
Mission accomplished tomorrow morning. Corwin's giving us a guided tour of Red Star.
Riding cowboy, make me proud.
Corwin slaps the shoulder of a guy in a red and black jumpsuit who's standing by the Red Star Racer holding a helmet. Natalie looks across at him as he turns round. It's the thin man. He holds the clump of Dylan's hair up and caresses his face with it. The thin man gets into the driving seat of the Red Star Racer. Watching him intently, Natalie gets into the Stars and Stripes car. Natalie grabs a helmet and puts it on. The thin man zooms off round the track in the Red Star Racer. Natalie speeds after him. Alex and Dylan run out. Alex puts on a headset and talks to Natalie.
Hey, what's going on?
We got an old friend on the track, guys.
It's a creep from Chinatown.
Creepy thin man.
The thin man glances in a mirror. Natalie closes in, her blue eyes set on the tail of the Red Star Racer, which weaves from side to side. Alex and Dylan watch with concern.
Dad, it's a round track. He's not going anywhere.
The thin man does a 180-degree turn. Natalie follows, burning up a cloud of rubber smoke. The thin man speeds along the track, then takes a sharp turn and heads towards an exit. Natalie's right behind him. Technicians run for cover. Dylan smiles at Alex. The two racing cars speed along a service road, through a toll booth, and up a busy street the wrong way. The Red Star Racer zooms between oncoming traffic, closely followed by Natalie in the Stars and Stripes car. A red sedan veers out the way, hits the back of a pickup truck, and flies through the air. It lands on its nose, skids along, and crashes onto its side. The Red Star Racer heads along a freeway and onto a vast suspension bridge over a bay. The thin man spins his car round and stops facing Natalie, who stops her car at the other end of the bridge. A seagull takes flight. The thin man, eyes wide in a manic stare, puts his foot down, spins his rear wheels and drives at Natalie. She accelerates and the pair race along the deserted bridge, directly at each other. At the last second, the thin man turns his wheel slightly and scoots right over the top of the low front of Natalie's car. The Red Star Racer flies through the air and plummets into the bay. Natalie gets out of her car and takes off her helmet. She looks over the side of the bridge at the wreckage. Her mouth hangs open. Back at the office, the Angels watch footage of Red Star headquarters with disheveled brown-haired Eric Knox.
With a micro camera we planted on Corwin's briefcase, we've been able to study Red Star's layout.
There's the mainframe, just behind that door.
Well, that's where my software would be, but the security looks incredible.
Yeah, restricted access.
Fingerprint ID.
Retinal scanner.
Angels, break it down.
Only two directors at Red Star have access to the mainframe room. In order to get through the security system, they have to synchronize their entrance.
They put cards in slots.
A gelatin scanning plate takes exact fingerprints.
A laser accurate 0.009 millimeters scans the retina.
The director's eyes are scanned and the door to a white chamber opens.
The mainframe is accessible only through an airless antechamber, a surveillance monitored clean room.
They wear breathing apparatus.
There's only one way to get through undetected. Be invisible.
A display flashes, countermeasures armed. The directors enter a room full of lights.
The floor is rigged with pressure sensitivity. Any contact which exceeds 0.25 seconds will trigger the alarm.
Sounds impossible.
Sounds like fun.
Natalie and Alex, wearing glitzy bikini tops and silky translucent pantaloons, take the stage in a room done out like a Bedouin tent, with columns separated by onion dome-shaped openings. Sitting around on cushions are suited businessmen, one of whom is director number one, a stocky man with brown hair. As Alex and Natalie wiggle their hips suggestively, the director pokes out his tongue and shakes his fists in the air. He swigs from a bottle of beer. Dylan, wearing a veil, appears by a column. Noticing the director has put his bottle down, she walks over and takes it. The director looks round, but Dylan's already gone. On the shoulder of the brown bottle is a clear fingerprint. In a lab, Dylan scans the bottle. A handprint appears on a computer screen. Next to a maze of tubes and bottles, an artificial hand rises from a waxy vat. Balding director number two opens his front door to Bosley and the Angels, who are dressed in traditional German Alpine costumes. Natalie hands the bemused director a basket and starts to dance. Bosley's playing a French horn. Alex plays an accordion.
My singing box is sexy.
The director's friend looks at a card in the basket.
I got the wrong address.
Shh. Monsieur Lynn, this not so. Monsieur Lynn, get the song. The ingle you'll in me. Like a shotgun, it's time.
Bosley moves towards the director and points the horn of his instrument at his face. An infrared scanner inside the horn scans the director's retina. In the lab, Natalie holds up a colored contact lens and grins. Later, the angels drive up outside a sleek white skyscraper.
You ready to whip them into shape or what, Alex?
Inside Red Star headquarters, elevator doors open. Alex, in a black leather skirt and jacket, steps out, accompanied by Natalie and Dylan, who are dressed as suited men. They follow Alex as she marches through a large office full of men sitting at desks. A chubby woman steps up.
You must be Ms. Ahrens. I'm Doris. I'm sorry for all this confusion. I had you on the schedule for next week. Instead of this week. I don't know what happened.
That's what I'm here to figure out.
Well, you are the efficiency expert, huh?
Yes. I am.
Alex walks on.
Bitch. I heard that.
Later, the staff sit in a lecture hall. Natalie and Dylan stand behind Alex, who paces and whacks a cane against a desk.
Your methodologies are antiquated and weak. Your procedures of approval ensure that only the least radical ideas are rewarded. Meanwhile, your competition is innovating!
Alex whacks Dylan.
Ow.
Alex approaches a long-faced guy.
You. What was the last suggestion you made to your boss?
I thought the Coke machine should be free.
Why?
Because caffeine helps us program.
Alex hops onto the desk and grabs the guy's head.
Perfect. Smart, simple, and logical. And what did your boss say?
He said no.
Alex thwacks the desk.
Question! Who builds the products of this company? You do.
Engineers do.
She strokes a guy's face.
Not managers.
They should be answering to you, not you to them.
She breaks her cane.
Who else has an idea like this man's Coke machine?
They all put up their hands.
All right, tell me. Better yet,
can anyone show me?
Ooh, barracuda.
Red Star mainframe, level 4. Alex leads the engineers along a corridor. Lagging behind are Dylan and Natalie carrying briefcases. They go up to the mainframe door and simultaneously push cards into slots. In panels in front of them, metal plates slide down. In front of Dylan, a gelatin scanning plate is revealed. A metal arm comes towards Natalie and a pincer clamps onto her head. Retinal scanners protrude towards Natalie's eyes and scan them. Wearing the false hand she created, Dylan presses the fingers against the gelatin scanning plate. A message is displayed. Access granted. Dylan smiles at Natalie. Access denied flashes on her screen.
Not working.
Dylan nervously looks round. Natalie moves the light brown contact lens back and forth across her light blue iris and tries the scanner again. Access granted. Natalie goes into the white chamber. She starts to strip off. Later, she's wearing a white breathing suit.
There's only one way to get through undetected. Be invisible.
The white suit makes Natalie appear invisible against the stark white walls of the chamber. She opens the round door to the mainframe room, which has a wall of cascading red lights. The floor is covered in discs.
The floor is rigged with pressure sensitivity. Any contact which exceeds 0.25 seconds will trigger the alarm.
Wearing a leotard, Natalie does a succession of backflips across the floor, then somersaults up onto a cube-shaped platform. She lands on her white-gloved hands and remains in a handstand in the center of the cavernous room. Outside, a guard checks Dylan's ID badge.
Thank you, sir.
In the mainframe room, Natalie lifts up a flap that has a circuit board behind it. A bank of screens slide out of a panel. Natalie plugs a cable into the circuit board.
I hope you don't mind if we look around.
On the other end of the cable is a small transmitter, which Natalie attaches to the circuit board. She closes the flap and blows it a kiss. As Natalie flick-flacks out of the room, the platform she was on sinks down and a spherical cover closes over the top of it. The round door to the white chamber slowly closes. On a cafe terrace, the angels sit at an umbrella table with Eric Knox and his partner, Vivian Wood.
So, you're saying we have complete access to Red Star's computer?
And they have no idea we can peek inside.
Well, you guys are tremendous. Thanks.
I'm just looking for evidence of Knox technology software in the Red Star system. Where is it?
Oh, Bosley has it back at the agency in the laptop. It has a direct link to the Red Star mainframe.
Bosley? Maybe we should be doing our own analysis. Surely Eric would be the best person.
Well, our goal was to find out whether or not Red Star had stolen your software. It would be unethical for us to give you full access to their systems.
If we get any proof, we'll give it to you right away.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's cool.
Vivian shrugs, unconvinced. Alex starts talking Japanese. You know, Knox may not be out of danger yet. Natalie replies, smile. Don't panic the client. One of us should check the security in his house. Absolutely, I agree. Dylan shares a smile with Eric. That night, Dylan's at Eric's curvy, futuristic hillside residence.
Is everything all right?
Yeah, nothing up here.
Dylan drops down from the ceiling. Drink in hand, Eric grins.
Wow, that's cool.
Dylan spots a photograph.
It's the Green Beret.
That's my dad.
Oh, it's nice.
She attaches a gizmo to a telephone.
And that's the guy who killed him.
Dylan looks at Eric.
Yeah, they were in the Army Intelligence together. This was his best friend, and he turned on him.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Why do you keep it?
Oh, to remind me. Be careful who you trust. Don't take any wooden nickels. What about you? Did you ever have parents? I mean, I know you have parents, but I mean, where's your mom?
My mom died when I was six, and I never met my father.
Eric stands close to Dylan.
You never met your father?
No.
Now you work for...
Dylan smiles.
A man you've never seen. This is interesting.
He knocks a Scrabble board onto the floor.
That was sweet. Wanna play Scrabble?
You know what?
Don't worry about it. I got somebody.
That's okay.
They pick up the pieces.
They call it, you know, those...
Kneeling on the floor, their eyes meet. Dylan gets up and grabs a silver aerosol-shaped object.
This is a panic button.
Okay.
She gives it to him.
And if you just press it, then any one of us, whoever's closest, will be here like that if there's any problem.
Like that? Okay. Oh. Right now, that would be you.
Yes, but right now, you don't have a problem.
Yeah, I do. I don't know how to make chicken.
He holds up a box of shake and bake.
Scrabble. Shake and bake. I'll shake, you bake.
Standing at the bottom of some steps holding her coat, Dylan smiles bashfully. She walks up the steps, takes Eric's box of shake and bake, and looks at him coyly.
I want to shake.
Natalie meets the handsome young waiter, Pete, outside a club.
Hey, Pete.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Good to see you.
See you.
Want your ticket?
Right.
They walk up to the entrance.
So thanks for giving me a chance.
Oh, are you kidding? I really wanted to see you.
Really?
Yeah. You look great.
Thank you.
At a restaurant.
I was thinking a lot about us. I was wondering.
No. I know you have something to say, but I have something to say, too. I've been thinking a lot about you and me and us. And I know we have these crazy lives, but I can't help it. I love you.
At the office.
Searching Red Star mainframe for Knox Technology software.
software, not tech.
Bosley's cooking.
Coming.
He puts down a pan and goes to the entry phone. He looks at a video screen above it.
Hello.
Trick or treat for UNICEF.
Bosley raises his brows and opens the door to Vivian, who's wearing a tight black leather mini dress.
That's a very nice costume, young lady.
It glows in the dark.
Inside the club.
I hope you like to dance.
Are you kidding? I love to dance.
Wearing an asymmetrical pink top and jeans, Natalie smiles ecstatically and claps her hands. Soul Train is written in lights above the stage. A beefy black guy steps up to Natalie.
You, want to dance on stage?
Us?
Yes. Yeah.
No, the stage is for the ladies.
Okay.
Oh, then you know what? Don't worry about it. You know what? I'll just find a spot on the floor. It's okay.
No, wait a second. Look, this is like Soul Train's highest honor. I'm not going to sit here and let you not go up there. So, yeah, she'll go.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I've always wanted to go up there.
Have a great time.
Okay, I'll be back.
Meanwhile, Vivian kisses Bosley hard and pushes him onto a couch.
There are some lines that I never cross.
Lines have never stopped me, John. It's Miss...
Damn.
And it's Vivian.
Yeah. Okay, Miss Vivian. Miss Vivian. All right, Miss Vivian. You're a pro. I mean, you're not a pro, but you're an executive. We have to keep our relationship professional.
May I?
She reaches for a bottle of wine.
I'll get you a glass.
At the club.
Oh, my God. Becky, look at her back.
A blissful Natalie's helped onto the stage. With her back to the crowded dance floor, Natalie wiggles her butt around. Natalie's lost in her own groovy world as she swings her hips wider and wider. She glances down at her tush, claps her hands, and grins at Pete, who waves. Natalie spins round and lets rip like a hyperactive orangutan. The cool crowd of clubbers stare, slack-jawed. Natalie shakes her arms to and fro. A couple show a disdainful look. Pete's dwarfed by two beefy bouncers. He grins at one of them. The enormous guy remains grave-faced. Natalie jumps down from the stage and dances along between the clubbers, who start to look intrigued. Pete looks up at the other bouncer. The giant of a man glances down at Pete disdainfully. Natalie's hand jiving. A young woman in a halter neck top and a guy in a trilby share a smile, then begin to dance. Pete continues trying to make conversation with the bouncers.
Guys are like in really good shape, you know? Definitely.
Now everyone's dancing. Natalie's moving jerkily like a robot.
Great, the robot, yeah!
Natalie's body popping.
It's old school, right? Definitely. Old school!
Natalie thrusts her fists forwards and runs on the spot.
Running man, look at that!
Natalie waves at Pete and grooves her way through the crowd towards him. She slaps her hands down onto his.
Incredible!
Really? Oh my God, I'm having so much fun! This is so exciting! Oh, you know, I have to go number one!
She leaves Pete befuddled. Alex takes a cake out of the oven and prepares a lavish meal.
Okay. Hi. How was your day?
Great. You know how superheroes have these secret identities where they... No, not superheroes.
She takes off oven gloves.
You're an action star. I get a lot of action. That is so...
In the club toilet.
Hey, girls! We're kind of having so much fun, I could just die.
Alex.
Jason, I'm one third of an elite crime-fighting team backed by an anonymous millionaire.
She grins.
Yes, that's it.
Roger Corwin, wearing a bathrobe, is sitting in his private sauna swathed in steam. The thin man, dressed in black, comes in and glares at him. Corwin scowls.
What are you doing here?
The thin man draws a sword from his stick and slashes Corwin. Corwin drops dead. Alex finishes decorating a joint of beef.
Perfect.
A shot fires through a carton. In the club.
Hey.
A man wraps a chain around Natalie's neck. Meanwhile, two men pepper the silver trailer with bullets. Alex climbs up and wedges herself against the ceiling. In the club toilet, Natalie runs up a wall and flips over the top of her attacker. She kicks him against a mirror. The silver trailer's full of holes. Alex hangs on, just below the ceiling. The shooters speed off in a jeep.
Come on, go!
Alex looks down at her cake. It's intact. As she sighs, the middle of the cake sinks in.
Murphy O'Meyer. That does it.
Who bet you?
Vivian, what?
Natalie removes her boot from her attacker's throat.
You bitch.
She kicks him in the head. He falls unconscious. At the office, Bosley's holding some matches.
I love a fire.
He strikes a match, holds it to the fire, and a fireball leaps out at him. He cowers. Bosley retreats stiffly to the bathroom. As he does so, Vivian empties powder from a capsule into his glass of wine. Alex runs out of the perforated trailer and slides across the back of her silver Mercedes. She's about to get in when Jason strolls up. There's blood on his shirt from a film shoot.
Hey.
Oh my God, you're hit.
No. Well, I mean, the squibs hurt a little when they go off, but I'm fine. What happened to my trailer?
Jason, I haven't been completely honest with you.
Were you in there when that happened? I mean, look at it.
I'm not a bikini waxer.
She runs her hands down his chest.
I mean, it was kind of a turnout.
He grins saucily. The trailer's sides give way and it crumples. Jason stares at the wreckage.
I gotta go.
Charlie?
Yeah.
At the club.
Listen, I have to go. I can't explain right now, but will you call me tomorrow?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, great, thanks.
All right.
Natalie leaves Pete confused. She runs back and plants a big smacker on his lips. Sitting behind, the stony-faced bouncers lighten up, grinning broadly.
Guys, finally you warm up a little bit.
On a cell phone.
Dylan, hey, it's Nat. Listen, Vivian Wood is a fake and an all-around bitch. Her assassin just paid me a visit. We gotta warn Knox.
Well, I'm in his house right now.
You are?
In bed.
You know what?
Call Alex and meet me at the agency.
Dylan!
Dylan rolls her eyes.
Dylan!
Natalie speeds off in a red Ferrari. Dylan walks into Eric's lounge with a sheet wrap round her.
Hey, don't stand next to the window because it's not safe.
Hey. Ooh, toga.
They embrace.
Oh, God.
Listen, I just found out that... Who's that?
Vivian, in a black dress.
Working undercover? Well, it's a full-service job.
I'll bet.
I can see by your gown that you're unarmed. Some maniac could just stroll in off the street and blow you both to bits.
Hey, Viv, you're obsessed. All work and no play makes Viv a dull girl.
Just gotta tie up some loose ends here. Why don't you take a seat?
Eric and Dylan sit.
You want some champagne?
Eric sips some champagne. An anxious-looking Dylan spells out enemy with the Scrabble letters. Eric takes Dylan's head in his hands and kisses her on the lips.
I know.
Eric gets up and walks off. Dylan, her tousled red hair cascading over her shoulders, slowly rises ashen-faced. She steps towards Vivian.
Sad news. Your girlfriends are dead. Corwin?
Vivian points a gun at Dylan. The thin man strolls in smoking. He nods to Vivian. Dylan stares meekly across at Eric, who's having a stretch. He removes his gown, revealing black trousers and a vest top over his muscular torso. Eric wiggles his bum to the music and casually smokes a cigarette. He looks sleepy-eyed across at Dylan and saunters towards her.
I don't think it's gonna work out, you and me. Which is a real bummer, you know, because you, Dylan, Tomcat in the sack. You like that? Let me get this straight. You're a woman. Women have natural intuition, and you're a detective. And you had no idea that this was going to happen.
Vivian grins.
I knew.
She knew.
And I know what's going to happen next.
Tell her, baby.
Eric nibbles Vivian's neck.
All the angels are going to heaven.
And Bosley?
Oh, we're going to keep him. We like him. And his computer, too.
He's special.
Eric spits fruit pips. Dylan looks down ruefully.
Corwin had nothing to do with this.
No, but I never really liked him.
And the kidnapping was a setup.
Afraid so.
And Red Star was a setup.
You got it all figured out. Any other questions?
Why?
Eric drags on his cigarette.
Ask your boss.
Charlie?
Dylan slowly takes a step back.
You're after Charlie.
Charlie.
Eric grabs the gun.
They say that in death, all life's questions are answered. Can you let me know?
Eric shoots Dylan, and she flies back through a window. He casually twirls the gun on his finger.
It's with you, Charlie.
Eric hands the gun to Vivian. He picks up his father's war photograph and snaps it shut.
Come on.
The thin man follows Eric out. Natalie and Alex drive up and park outside the offices of Charles Townsend Private Investigations. They get out of their cars and walk up to each other.
You all right? What's going on?
Something's going on.
Where's Dylan?
In Eric's lounge, the end of the sheet that was wrapped around Dylan is caught on a spike of glass at the bottom of the smashed window. Reverse film shows Dylan flying up through the window, which then becomes whole again. A flashback.
You know, they say in death, all life's questions are answered. Can you let me know?
Eric shoots Dylan. In slow motion, the bullet flies from the barrel of the revolver, sending out reverberations as it passes through the air. Dylan flails backwards. The bullet just misses her and hits the window. The glass disintegrates. Dylan falls out of the room, which juts out over a hillside. The sheet catches on the spike at the bottom of the window pane. Gripping onto the other end of the sheet, Dylan glances down at the steep hillside beneath her. The sheet starts to tear. Oblivious, Eric, Vivian, and the thin man head out.
So what are we doing? House of pancakes or sizzling?
What are you, like the cheapest man on the planet?
Last out, the thin man looks at the sheet caught on the glass but walks on. The sheet rips off. Dylan drops naked onto the hillside and rolls down. In a house at the bottom of the hill, two boys are playing a video game.
So, what did it look like?
I don't know. It was like, all cool and stuff.
Dylan's outside.
You've never seen a boobie.
Have too.
Have not.
I've seen lots of boobies.
You're right.
Yeah.
Dylan knocks on the French windows.
A little help?
The boys stare wide-eyed at Dylan, who's holding a rubber ring in front of her naked self. Later, wearing some of the kids' clothes, a disheveled and bruised Dylan drives up to the office on a moped. Natalie and Alex stare at her, bemused.
Don't ask. Where's Knox? Is he okay? He's great. He's the bad guy.
She dismounts.
The kidnapping was a setup. He's behind the whole thing. What? Why? He wasn't exactly forthcoming when he shot me out the window.
Walking to the office, the angels are thrown into the air as the building explodes in a fireball. They land covered in soot on the front of a car. The office building is a charred shell.
Oh my God, Bosley! He's safe. Knox already has him.
Their faces filled with anguish, they climb off the car.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Bosley is with the man who just tried to kill us. How does that make him safe? Because he won't kill Bosley until he kills Charlie. Kills Charlie? Look, I don't know what his plan is, but I know that we can stop him.
As flames lick the wreckage, Dylan squats in the rubble by a battered brass plaque which reads, Charles Townsend, Private Investigations. Alex picks up a crumpled piece of paper.
If Knox thinks we're dead, why would he blow up the agency? What does he want with Charlie?
All we know for sure is that he wanted us to break into Red Star.
Natalie thinks back.
You can imagine if this got into the wrong hands, how dangerous it could be.
Knox used us to tap into Red Star's mainframe, not to get back his software, but to gain control over their global positioning satellites.
And with his software, Knox could match Charlie's voice over the phone.
And use Red Star satellites to track him.
Why would Knox go to so much trouble to find Charlie?
Dylan thinks back.
Well, that's the guy who killed him. They were in the Army intelligence together. This was his best friend, and he turned on him.
Knox thinks Charlie killed his father.
So if Knox can intercept Charlie when he uses his cell phone...
He can pinpoint his exact location.
Yeah, but Knox has to get Charlie on the phone before he can start the trace.
Well, no one knows how to reach him. The only person that Charlie calls directly is...
Bosley.
Two henchmen drag a semi-conscious Bosley into a tall, narrow cell with stone walls. They leave, pulling the wooden door shut behind them. Later, Bosley barges at the door. An outer wall with two windows in it curves up to meet the straight wall with the door in it. There's a small bed and a toilet. Bosley tries in vain to force the door's latch. He peers through a slot.
May I have some ice water, please?
Bosley rips up bed sheets and starts to tie them together into a makeshift escape rope. He stands on the bed and feeds the sheets out of a window. Standing at the bottom of the high, curved exterior wall is the thin man. Smoking a cigarette, he casually glances up at the sheets emerging from the window. Bosley cups his hands around his mouth. He talks to a small bird.
Well, I'm not surprised because I had a real long talk with a squirrel one time. Longer than I can talk to most humans.
He sits bouncing a baseball into a catcher's mitt. The ball hits his jaw.
Oh, oh, oh.
Bosley gurns and grimaces. He pushes his finger against the tiny transmitter stuck on one of his back teeth. He shoves his finger in his ear and wiggles it around. He rubs the back of his head and points his fingers up like an aerial.
Hello? 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 Hello out there?
Any sign of Bosley's laptop?
They must have taken it when they grabbed him.
We should check Knox's place for any leads.
Approved.
Okay. I'll drive.
Angel! Angel, help me!
Bosley?
Angel! We begin our broadcast day! Baby, come and get me, girls! If you can follow the sound of my voice, then draw some triangles or something.
Even if we had our equipment, he'd have to be within 20 miles.
The place where they got me looks like Cher's bedroom, and it stinks.
Come on, Bosley, tell us where you are.
It smells, actually, like the ocean. And if I look out the window, I see the ocean.
You could be anywhere this half of North America.
Jack.
To the bird.
Tell him where I am.
Oh!
Natalie copies the bird's call.
It's a Cynopygmia! A pygmy nuthatch! They only live in one place! Carmel!
I can't tell you anything else except this feels like it could be the first day of the last of my life, you know what I mean? Or the last day of the first of my life or something. I think I'm in trouble.
They've got a lighthouse, two colonial-era hotels, seven manor houses, one owned by the National Park Service. One owned by Nick Zero Corporation, another by Wolo.
Wait a minute! Is Zero spelled with X or Z?
X.
It's an anagram. Rearrange the letters and you'll get Eric Knox.
Scrabble freak. There's an old tunnel leading down to the shore. It looks like the best way to get in undetected is a sea approach. We're gonna need a boat.
And a cover, but I mean, we can't exactly pull up in the speedboat.
As they whiz along, Dylan starts to smile.
Head to the marina.
Speeding through a tunnel, Natalie does a swift about turn and drives off in the opposite direction. Next day, the Angels are standing with thin, geeky Chad on the deck of his tugboat as it chugs across the ocean. Dylan sings with Chad.
Here's a fine girl, what a good wife you would be. But my life, my love and my lady is the sea.
Natalie smiles at Dylan, who shrugs. Working on a computer, Alex frowns. In his cell, Bosley's sitting on the edge of his bed. He nibbles at a lump of ice, then holds up a gun he's carved with his teeth. He holds it out in front of him like he means business. On the tugboat.
Hey, Chad, this thing going any faster? We're kind of in a hurry, and I could really open it up if you wanted me to drive. I could drive, right?
I'm sorry, friend of Starfish, but there's only one captain of this love boat. That captain is me. Chad.
Chad. Chad, captain of the love boat.
The Chad.
We're kind of in a hurry.
Yeah. The Chad.
He stares ahead entranced. Vivian and the thin man are on balconies outside the cliff-top tower where Bosley is held. Inside, Eric puts a CD into a computer's disk drive.
Knox Technologies voice identification software download confirmed.
Music plays on a boombox at Eric's feet. Suavely dressed in black and wearing boots with Cuban heels, he grooves around while smoking a cigarette and sipping a drink.
Red Star Satellite Network uplink confirmed.
A message on screen reads, accessing Red Star mainframe. Vivian watches Eric dance with a sultry smile across her lips.
Revenge is fine.
Chad's alone at the helm of his boat.
I have to say, Starfish, that I am honored. Honored to see that you've taken an interest in my work. And I think that you're very pretty. And Starfish? Starfish, where are you going?
They're in scuba gear.
Starfish, are you going swimming? Where are you going? Where are you going again? Starfish?
Chad stares with a pinched brow.
Was it the Chad?
Wearing wetsuits, flippers and masks, the girls dive in. Dylan pops up.
No! The Chad was great!
She dives down. Chad's flushed with pride. Later, the angels emerge from the ocean and walk across a rocky beach. Natalie unzips her black top, which has a plunging neckline. The threesome walk towards a cave at the base of the cliffs that the tower stands at the top of. They remove backpacks and the black rubber tops of their wetsuits. Natalie, Dylan, and Alex change into black outfits. Dylan puts a jacket over a yellow t-shirt and looks up at the cliffs.
I'll tap the signal from the roof. I'm gonna go deal with Knox.
I'm gonna go bring our Bosley back.
The three exchange determined looks and clasp hands together. Natalie heads towards a wooden door set into the cliff wall. Natalie goes up to the door and checks it, then rears up and kicks it. Natalie barges her way in. Alex is climbing up the cliffs. Dylan, already at the top, crawls behind a wall.
I don't know how to make chicken.
She peers over the derelict section of wall. A number of henchmen mill around the grounds. Alex, wearing a backpack, reaches the top of a wall by the entrance at the base of the tower. She looks around at the guards, then up at the tower. Alex reaches back and pulls a fancy high-tech bow out of her backpack. She unfolds it, loads an arrow with a line attached, and fires the arrow. The arrow sticks in the eaves of the tower's roof. Dylan drops down into the hall where Eric is working. He stares at her. She smiles.
Dylan, thank God you're alive.
Vivian aims a gun at her.
Forgive me, you know my better half.
It figures I would meet the perfect guy, and he would already have a perfect girl.
Meanwhile, Alex pulls herself up the outside of the tower on the rope attached to the arrow in the eaves. She clambers up through a hole onto the wooden floor of the conical roof space. She takes off her backpack, goes to a control box and pulls out a cable. Down below, a guard patrols along a path. Natalie's in a tunnel beneath him. She looks out of a barred window, then moves on. Vivian watches on a surveillance monitor. Two henchmen are tying Dylan to a chair.
Hello, Blondie. Your girlfriend's here.
Jimmy, Polly, go secure Bosley, would you? Like now.
The henchmen run off. Natalie tentatively walks up steps inside the tower.
Bosley?
Natalie, is that you? Behind this door.
She reaches through the slot and hugs him.
Oh, Bosley, I'm so happy I saw you.
We're all here. I'm gonna get you out.
Alex takes her laptop computer from her backpack. She clips wires from the back of it onto wires from the cable she ripped out. She types on the computer, which displays a globe.
GPS, phone.
The yellow and black bird flies in.
Pick me now.
Natalie pulls out her cell phone.
I'm getting tickled.
Who's calling now?
She grins.
Pete? Hello? Hi, Pete. How are you?
I'm good. I just, you said you wanted me to call.
I did want you to call. I mean, I do want you to call. I mean,
ask him if he can call you back.
I'm so happy to hear from you.
Yeah, no, I really wanted to talk to you. I like spending time with you. I was just hoping to see more of you, you know, like maybe in a continuous block, you know, all together.
I know. You know, it's just been kind of crazy this week.
Natalie, watch your back.
The henchman approaches. Natalie slams one against a wall and kicks the other in the guts.
Put the sleeper on.
Natalie knocks them both out. Vivian's watching.
Never send a man to do a woman's job.
She saunters off outside the cell.
Nice work, Natalie.
Thanks, Bosley.
On the phone.
Pete? Hi.
Eric.
You know, Dylan, I think under different circumstances, I think you and I would have been a great couple.
Yeah, if you hadn't shot me out the window and tried to kill everyone I love, I think we could have had a chance.
Can you keep a secret?
He's holding a reel of tape.
You can't tell anybody, okay?
Disgusting.
You have the fullest, sweetest, most luscious lips I have ever kissed.
He tapes over them.
Oh.
I just gotta take this call.
He goes to the phone. Up in the roof, Alex types on her computer.
9 o'clock, Charlie. Right on time.
Alex slaps the top of her laptop screen in frustration. The thin man walks up some steps behind Alex. Eric holds up his phone and shows Dylan the display. He's drawn lips on the tape on her mouth.
Mr. Bosley's phone. Eric Knox speaking.
Mr. Knox, this is Charles Towns.
Eric's computer analyzes Charlie's voice patterns via the Red Star satellite.
I'm delighted the Angels came through for you. Are you in the office?
The thin man approaches Alex from behind.
Come on, Charlie, hang up. He's almost got you.
No, we're all down at the beach having mimosas. Can you join us?
I'll take a rain check, Eric. I've made other plans. Is Bosley there?
Oh, no, he just went to the men's room. He'll be right back.
Dylan struggles.
Wait. He's coming.
Bosley? Eric's screen reads, Trace in progress, acquiring target. The same message is on Alex's screen. The thin man lunges with his sword. The bird flies off, and Alex dives out the way. She grabs the thin man and throws him against a beam. Eric's still on the phone.
That's not him. Sorry. Can you hold on 1 second longer?
Not a problem.
Eric's computer reads target acquired. Natalie.
I'm sorry, could you hold on a second?
Sure, you bet.
I like him so much.
An axe sticks in the cell door. Natalie turns to see Vivian, who waves cutely. Natalie grabs the axe and swipes off the door lock. She opens the door and tosses the axe to Bosley.
Hey, Boz.
Eric.
Bosley?
Into the phone.
He's coming, sir.
Up in the roof, Alex spins and kicks the thin man in the shoulder. Natalie and Vivian jump into the void down the middle of the tower. They land on a crossbeam, then drop to the bottom and fight. Bosley wields the axe. Alex jumps onto a giant bell hanging from the ceiling. The thin man cuts its rope with his sword, and it drops down through the tower. Natalie and Vivian dive out the way. Eric's still on the phone.
Sorry, not him. Can I take a message?
Just tell him I called, he's fine.
Captions on Eric's computer read, Charles Townsend located. It shows a figure in a beachside house.
Gotcha.
The thin man swipes like a dervish with his sword. As Alex backs away, she sees Charles Townsend, located, displayed on her computer. The thin man kicks her through the sloping roof. Alex bursts out through the tiled roof. Still fighting, Natalie and Vivian crash out of the front door and roll down some steps. Alex bounces off a roof and lands on her back. Natalie picks up her phone. Pete's still holding.
Just one more sec.
Is this a bad time?
Pete's nonplussed.
You just seem like a little distracted.
Vivian kicks Natalie's phone from her hand, catches it, and holds it to her ear.
Is this the famous Charlie?
No, this is Pete.
She throws the phone against a step and it smashes.
Hey, I'd like that guy.
Vivian picks up the jagged remains of a door and charges. Natalie kicks it to bits. The thin man continues to attack Alex with his sword. Inside, Eric puts on his shades.
That man's got a beautiful telephone voice.
He marches towards Dylan.
That's one more dead and you'll never know.
He kisses the tape and rips it off.
Bad news, baby. I have to leave.
I gotta go torture and kill your boss.
He approaches his men.
Mikey, Jerry. You guys like Angel King?
Eric goes with his computer. Alex holds the thin man's sword arm and lays into him. She knees him in the face. Vivian's pinned to the ground with Natalie astride her.
Hard it is to find a quality man in Los Angeles.
Natalie punches Vivian in the face. Eric strolls off, holding his phone and his computer. Alex takes a chain from a door and wraps it round the thin man's arm. She flings him over onto his back. He gets up and lunges with his sword. Alex wraps the chain around his wrist and they both spin through the air. Inside, one of the henchmen takes Dylan's lighter from her jacket pocket.
Don't take my lighter.
Ignoring her, the guy takes a cigarette from behind his ear and lights it. Dylan jumps up and down in her chair and cracks off the crosspiece that her ankles are tied to. She kicks the lighter out of the man's hand and catches it in her hands that are tied behind the chair back. The men attack. Dylan raises her feet.
Wait. I got something to tell you. By the time this is over, every one of you is going to be face down on the floor, and I'm going to moonwalk out of here.
They surge forward.
You're not listening to me. See, first, you're gonna help me out of my chair. And then I'm gonna leapfrog over you.
She grins.
Before I break his nose. And since my trusty lighter isn't working, I'm gonna do all of this with my hands tied behind my back.
The five men attack. Dylan kicks the first away and reverses her chair into him. She crashes down and frees herself as two more attack. She jumps over one and runs up another's chest, then flips over and stands with her tied hands held out.
King Kong palm.
A slick-haired guy attacks and Dylan dispenses him with blows to the front and back. She jumps up and kicks another, then another. She hangs from a railing and floors two more with her boots.
Buddha on Lotus.
The four remaining men charge. Dylan kicks a bucket, which gets one in the face. She punches one guy and high kicks two more. She batters with her boots, so there are three men out cold. The last two attack, and Dylan spins round and kicks them both twice in succession. They're floored. She smiles at her handiwork.
And that's kicking your ass.
Dylan gracefully turns round and looks at the five unconscious men. She dances backwards through an archway. Alex pinned down. She holds him off with her chain. He leans down and rips out a lock of her hair. Vivian and Natalie are still fighting. The thin man grins demonically at his prize. Alex thwacks him with a rock. She gets up and yanks his sword away with her chain. Natalie and Vivian continue to batter each other with their fists. Alex runs at the thin man, then launches herself at him, legs flailing. Alex kicks the thin man to the ground. Inside, Bosley runs one way. Dylan runs another.
Hey!
Bosley cuts the ropes around Dylan's wrists with his axe. Outside, Natalie does a flying kick at Vivian. Dylan appears and grabs a length of chain with two loops on the end of it. She lassoes the thin man and Vivian and reels them in. As Alex and Natalie walk over, a dull green military chopper rises up from below the cliffs with Eric at the controls. The angels stare in disbelief. The angels turn on their heels. Eric blows the girls a kiss, flips a red lever on his joystick, and presses a button. A rocket shoots towards the angels, who jump off the top of a high wall. The tower's blown to bits. The angels land in a heap down on some grass. Rubble showers down on top of them. Out of the bushes in a blue Ford Bronco pickup truck. He stops beside the girls.
Come on, we're gonna miss happy hour.
Let's go. He's heading north, just past Paradise Cove.
Oh boy, they found it. That's Charlie's cabin.
Bosley speeds off with the girls on board.
You seen it? You seen Charlie?
It's a trusted friend and employee.
But you actually met Charlie.
What do you mean, that?
Like, you've actually seen him with your own eyes.
I saw his hand.
That could have been anybody's hand.
Bosley looks bashful. They tear along a narrow clifftop road. The chopper flies just ahead of them. Eric checks his watch. Alex gets her bow and arrow out and aims at the chopper.
She
shoots an arrow at the underbelly of the chopper, attached as a cable. The girls hold onto clamps fixed onto the cable and are lifted out of the Bronco. Bosley looks up. Eric flies on oblivious. He follows the coastline. The angels shimmy up the cable using their clamps. Eric looks at a computer map which locates Charlie's cabin on Paradise Cove. Natalie wraps her legs around one of the chopper's runners, as do Dylan and Alex. Alex looks across at Dylan, who climbs up towards an open hatch. Eric keeps an eye on his global positioning screen. Alex climbs onto a rocket mounted onto the side of the chopper. She turns a key on the side of the rocket and opens out two fins. Flying above Paradise Cove, Eric grins. Charlie's cabin sits in the middle of the lush, sandy beach. Eric swoops round and aims his rocket at Charlie's cabin. Dylan climbs in the open hatch behind Eric, who flips up the red catch on his joystick.
Sorry, Charlie.
Ah! Dylan punches Eric. The chopper veers off to one side. Alex falls off the rocket. Hanging upside down, Natalie catches her. She swings precariously underneath her. Alex hoists herself up into a runner. Dylan continues to beat Eric around the face. The chopper weaves all over the place as Alex gets back on the rocket. She looks at an open hatch with a keypad in it. A display reads, "Laser targeting engaged." At the controls, Eric elbows Dylan to the back of the cabin. Alex presses buttons on the rocket's keypad. Heat seeking engaged flashes on the rocket's display. Grinning, Eric fires the rocket. The rocket plummets. Alex lands on the runner. Natalie reaches into a hatch and short-circuits the chopper's primary flight controls. The rocket heads for Charlie's cabin, then veers off at the last minute. Eric frowns. Natalie looks in the side hatch at Dylan. Dylan surges forwards. Eric waggles his joystick and pushes his pedals, but there's no response. The control cable hangs loose underneath the chopper. The rocket heads for the chopper. Dylan's laying into Eric. Natalie drags her away. Alex jumps from the runner. Natalie and Alex jump from the hatch. Eric stares fearfully as the rocket heads right for him. The rocket hits and the chopper explodes in a ball of fire. The charred carcass drops to the ocean, surrounded by debris like black confetti. The evening sun casts its golden light across the glistening beach. Waves wash across Alex, Natalie, and Dylan, who lie bedraggled on the sand. Alex leans up and looks around. Dylan, then Natalie, struggle to their feet. Charlie's cabin lies up ahead, a small building with a pitched roof. Smoke wafts from its chimney.
Charlie.
The girls walk up the beach. They go up steps onto the porch of the cabin. At the front door, Natalie grabs her comrade's arms, and they turn to her.
Guys, we're finally gonna meet Charlie. Do I look okay?
They look coy.
Should we knock?
On a table inside is a double photo frame. On one side is a war picture of Charlie and Eric's father. On the other is a picture of the angels. The girls open the door and poke their heads inside. They walk in.
Charlie? Charlie?
Alex notices a smoking cigar propped on an ashtray and a half-finished game of checkers, then follows the other two to a doorway.
Good morning, angels.
Grinning, they turn to where Charlie's voice came from, a speakerphone.
Sorry I couldn't stick around.
We're so happy you're okay, Charlie.
I'm just fine, angels. Mission accomplished?
They flop onto a couch.
I think the client was blown away.
At a beach bar.
Eric Knox was born John McCadden. It seems his life's mission was to bring me down. His father was in my Army Intelligence Unit. He was working as a double agent. When he was discovered, he was killed by the other side.
Well, I guess that's not the story Knox heard.
Charlie talks over a speakerphone.
Charlie, I've really enjoyed working on this assignment. And I eagerly anticipate returning to work.
He sips a fancy drink.
Bosley's had one too many Buddhas. Bosley's definitely had a few.
I already have a team rebuilding the office. It'll be better than new by the time you get back.
Thank you, Charlie. Is there any chance that you would be joining us, Charlie?
He's walking on the sand nearby.
I'd love to, angels.
Gray-haired Charlie is watching them.
But I have some precious treasures to watch over.
Dylan looks round.
Oh, come on, Charlie. We'll make it fun.
Yeah, we're drinking from coconuts and Buddhas.
Coconuts.
So, Charlie, how will we ever know you really, truly exist unless you come down here and have a coconut with us?
Faith, angels. It's called faith.
Dylan smiles contentedly. Natalie frowns slightly. Dylan raises her glass.
To Charlie.
To Charlie.
To Charlie.
Charlie.
Bosley tips off his lounger. He gets up and pours his drink over the angels.
Too late.
The girls chase Bosley down to the water. Natalie pushes him in. Unnoticed, Charlie strolls off down the beach. He glances back, then walks on. Soaked to the skin and grinning gleefully, Bosley and the Angels walk up the beach. ITFC audio description by Matthew Vickers.
I'm having a serious habit problem.